and welcome to the Taskmaster podcast episode million. I don't know what episode it is, but we're talking about series 2, episode 5 of Taskmaster. Hopefully you have watched that episode recently and you're watching along, so you've refreshed your memory because we will be going through it with a fine tooth comb. And if you've watched all of the episode with a beady eye, then it's the best way of enjoying this podcast. And our special guest this week to chat about it is Richard Osman. Of course, he's been on the podcast before. We had him on talking about series 10, but now we are talking to him about his series, series 2. It's the final episode of series 2, only 5 episodes in series 2. But what a series it is. They're all quality. There's classic tasks in there. I very much enjoyed talking about it and going back over it. And hopefully Richard will enjoy it as well. Next week, we start talking about Series 11. We are pausing the old episode redos, and we are concentrating on Series 11. 18th of March, 9 p.m, Channel 4, Taskmaster Series 11, straight after the main show has been on. Come back here and listen to the podcast about it. First episode with Richard Herring, next week on the 18th of March. And I should say before we start, Richard Osman's sound was awful for this episode. Have absolutely no idea why. The last time we were with him, it was fine. This time, something went wrong, and we only realised afterwards. So apologies for that in advance. Richard only has one laptop, it's on the set of Pointless, and he's not allowed to take it home. So he has recorded this episode through a tin can with a bit of string on it. Thank you very much. Enjoy the podcast all the same. Welcome back, Richard Osman, to the Taskmaster podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to return.
You are our apart from Alex Horn, of course, who doesn't count. You are our first returning guest to the podcast.
No way.
How does that feel?
Well, it's interesting to see if anyone else chooses to return. Doesn't it? It's certainly, it'll be a reflection on your skills. How many people say, oh my God, I would love to come back.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm talking to Ed. He's such an interesting interview. You know what? He got stuff out of me that no other interviewer has ever done. He's like a kind of millennial Piers Morgan.
That's very much how I'm molding myself. That's the eventual aim in my career, to be a millennial Piers Morgan, but specifically within the topic of Taskmaster.
Oh, I mean, listen, perfect, because it's going to run and run and run, isn't it? So you've got a lifetime ahead of you.
Exactly. I worked out the other day that I think I'd seen all of the episodes twice anyway, and now I'm watching them again. So it's 3 times through. So that's got to be up there with the biggest Taskmaster fans in the country. And bearing in mind I've been on it, that's a pretty pathetic stat.
Well, I don't know, because it's always on, isn't it? If ever you turn on Dave, it's always on. So I must have seen a lot of them. You know, if ever it's on, I'll watch it, unless it's my series, in which case I won't.
Is that normally you'll turn off if you're on it, right?
Oh, if there's like a Taskmaster or a Would I Lie to You or something on Dave at like kind of 11:30, you just think, oh, lovely, just a bit of, you know... And I go, oh, I settle back. And then it goes, also joining David's team is Richard Osman. I'm like, oh, come on. Now I've got to watch Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares instead. So I love watching it, but just not my bits.
Well, we've made you do that today, unfortunately. We've made you watch the final episode of Series 2, which you are very much in.
Yes.
Do you remember were you nervous going into the final? Was there that adrenaline? Were you excited that you might win something?
I wasn't nervous. I'm going to be honest with you.
No,
a lot of the nerves in Taskmaster are sort of front loaded, and you know it was. I'm nervous every time I was in that studio, because as soon as they say what the task is, because when you go into the studio to record it, you don't know which task you're going to be watching.
Yeah.
And the second they say certain tasks, you remember how badly you did on them, and then you just think, oh, I've got to watch myself. Like 30 foot tall, which is 8% taller than I actually am, on a big screen, like really failing, like in an embarrassing way. And so I was always nervous in that regard. Not as nervous as John Richardson, who would walk out at times. In terms of the competitiveness, it wasn't like watching Fulham play Liverpool yesterday.
Which was a football game. And you said, correct, Fulham.
That's the one. I spot the Fulham.
Fulham, yes. Yeah. I used to live near the ground, so there you go. That's my football fact.
Wow. All right, Greavesy.
I don't understand that. So Doc, we had Doc on a couple of weeks ago, and he has blanked the entire series from his memory. It was like speaking to someone who'd been in a war. He just like had to blank it out. And when we brought it up again, he started sweating. He was having these horrible flashbacks.
Presumably, he was a medic in that war.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Good old Doc Brown. Joe is often asked about the potato throw. I think still to this day, even though it's years later, is still asked about the potato throw, including by me.
Wonderful.
Shut up about it. Do you have any lasting memories from the series? If someone says to you, Taskmaster Series 2, what sticks out? What sticks out in your memory file?
Well, that was brilliant. Joe and the potato. I loved, on the episode I watched last night, I like the group tasks very much, but it's I think that the whole thing is quite traumatic, if I'm honest. But if I think of what stands out for me, it's being in a civic building, some waiting room for like 45 minutes, where Andy Devonshire, as you know, is one of the producers, saying, "Oh, look, just sit out there. We're just setting something up here," and thinking, "Oh, what am I doing? I used to be a TV producer. And I'm sitting in the waiting room in some civic building." And then the door opens. And this massive room, about 40 feet away, is someone in male robes. And, you know, going and getting the task from him and saying, "Impress the mayor of Cobham, you have 30 minutes. And you just think, "Oh, really? It's come to this?"
Yeah.
It was so.
But you did great. You did great in that task, though, I thought. I thought you were on a really good wavelength with that mayor. I feel like I think I said it on the episode where we talked about it, but I feel like you've entertained a mayor before.
Well, listen, I certainly felt I could speak to the guy.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think, Ed, you can put me in a room with almost anyone, and I'll find common ground.
Yeah.
Whether they be a teenage heavy metal fan like yourself or the mayor of Cobham, like I think Peter was his name. I forget his surname, forgive me.
I believe he was the mayor of Amersham as well.
Oh, Chesham and Amersham.
Or Chesham.
He's done well for himself, hasn't he?
Yeah, Chesham and... Well, it wasn't Cobham, I know that much.
Chesham, I think you're right. You know Cobham. Of course it wasn't Cobham. That's Chesham. Crazy.
Maybe I was wrong as well. Well, there we go.
I love the fact I can literally remember his name, but I can't remember the town I was in.
Let's crack on with this episode. The final prize task of the series is best piece of memorabilia. And you know what? I think some people played pretty fast and loose with the definition of memorabilia in this.
I agree. It was more sort of more kind of antiques. A suffragette badge for all. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that Catherine had. She hadn't been to a suffragette gig. And picked it up on a merch stall afterwards.
Right? Got it signed by Emmeline Pankhurst. No, it's...
Yeah, and John's was like a Roman coin, and that's not memorabilia. That's not... He wasn't at the amphitheatre and, you know, some people were throwing coins at one of the gladiators they didn't like, and he picked one up.
Exactly.
You know, that's... Yeah, I agree 100%. There was just stuff from bargain hand.
Yeah, there were antiques. Memorabilia, it has to be a reminder for you for an event you were at or something that is close to your heart. And it's normally popular culture. I associate memorabilia with popular culture, which is why I think yours did get the 5 points. And I think it was the best one, the signed Jockey Wilson poster.
It was a rare 5 points for me in a prize in the prize task, which was nice. You know what? I sort of knew sometimes on that show, you know, when you know, right? And I knew it was Greg and I knew it was Jockey. And I knew it was a good looking. It's a good looking bit of, and it fitted the brief in the way that a suffragette medal didn't. So I was really confident. Even when the suffragette thing got pulled out, I thought, I know where Greg's going on this one.
I think you picked the right thing. So I think he sees darts players as heroes because they're at the top of their game, but they're in dangerous shape, which I think is something he is also.
Yeah, he absolutely can. Yeah, is. Listen, they're here. When Greg and I both played in the Celebrity Darts Tournament at Lakeside, and it's the only time I've been genuinely drunk on television. I mean, crazily so. Before our semi-final, I was playing Lee Mack in the semi-final, And my partner was Dieter Heaven, Women's World number one. And she just said, look, you've got to drink as much as possible. So we drank 5 pints before the game. She said, you've got to stop your brain talking to your hand. That's the key.
That's interesting.
Dieter, but now I've seen video back of me and Lee being interviewed by Gary Logan on this. We are both hammered. Dieter, standing behind me, she had drunk, I think, about 10 or 11 pints. Honestly, she could have driven. She was absolutely, you would not have known she had touched a drop of alcohol. It's extraordinary how much they drink.
We've talked briefly about the suffragette medal. Wonderful thing, but the same problem as John's Roman coin. If it was best antique or best, you know, best coin from history, I think, you know, I think they definitely should have been up there.
Coolest thing, even.
Coolest thing, for sure.
They're both cool things.
Because I think Catherine was, you know, the suffragette medal is a great thing. And obviously Greg made reference to the fact that he should have put it top because of what it represents. But, you know, he cares too much about the game and the specific category, and yours should have beaten Catherine's there. What I quite enjoyed was the potted history of the suffragette medal, immediately followed by Doc Brown introducing his prize by saying he was trying to have relations with Mylene Klass.
I mean, how far we've come.
Yeah.
I did feel a bit bad for Doc. I thought that was quite a good bit of memorabilia, really. Like, signed by Mylene Klass, and a bit of a personal story behind it, nicely framed.
Yeah.
But
unique as well. I don't think there's many, you know, raps out there that have been laid out in meter by a classical pianist.
Exactly right. And but you listen, Mylene Klass is many things, but she is not Jackie Wilson.
No.
You know, she's really not. God bless her.
No, she would. I mean, when she sits down at the piano, yes, she's had 6 or 7 pints.
To stop the brain talking to the fingers.
Stop the brain talking to the fingers. I mean, some of her last records are an absolute mess.
I know, but listen, it's kind of it's experimental.
Yeah. Finally, Joe's prize, which came bottom, a map of the Grand Union Canal signed by the lock keeper Clive Hutt.
Liked it very much.
I loved it.
And I really did like it. I thought that's terrific. That's memorabilia, but it's like Joe Wilkinson style memorabilia.
Exactly.
Which is not, he hasn't gone to a Justin Bieber concert. He's gone to a lock keeper's hut. I thought it was great. And didn't he say to Greg, say, how would you describe him in 3 words? He just said asthmatic.
Asthmatic. The full 3 words being asthmatic Clive Hutt.
Joe just gives and gives on this series of
he really, really does. So I wrote down that I think he's one of the only Taskmaster contestants ever whose prize tasks have been so consistently in persona at the cost of points.
Yeah. Yes, that's so admirable, isn't it?
He's always Joe Wilkinson. He's never trying to get points. He's just always trying to be himself, which I loved.
Knowing Joe a little bit from outside the studio, it's quite hard to see where his persona ends and he begins.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's a sliding scale, isn't it? He finds it very easy to access. Just in the opening credits, so I assume it's in an earlier one in the episode, he's got quite short hair, Joe. Shortest I've ever seen it. It looks like a businessman.
Yeah, he looks like a businessman who's like lost his job maybe 2 weeks ago and he's still going out and he's told his wife that he's going to work, but he's going to sit on a bench and feeding the pigeons.
Yeah, exactly. He's putting his suit in a left luggage locker at Felixstowe railway station. And then he's going to Greg's for a coffee and a sausage roll.
I don't think it deserved 1 point. I would have given that 3 at least.
I think Greg was put in a very difficult position with the suffragette thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think his brain was addled because he wasn't able to say that's not memorabilia.
Yeah.
And do you know who would agree with me? Emmeline Pankhurst. If she were, as she probably is, watching over us now.
Yeah, she loves Taskmaster.
She loves Taskmaster. She would say, absolutely brilliant prize, Catherine, but probably the wrong category.
Yeah. So it was 1 point for Joe, 2 points for Doc, 3 points for John, 4 points for Catherine, and the big 5 for you, Richard.
In second place, incredible though it may seem, I'm putting the incredibly worthy suffragette coin. Which means crushing in at number 1 is the signed Jockey Wilson poster.
Task 1. This is a classic. Get all of this shopping into the shopping trolley. Fastest wins. Your time starts now.
Yeah.
Do you have good memories of this? Because everyone seemed to have a little panic during this.
I really enjoyed it. I do have good memories of it because we had a little day out. Again, that was, I was going to say Cobham, but I suspect it was Chesham.
Yes, I'd imagine so.
Around the back of the Sainsbury's in there. Just a little local colour for you there.
Yeah, that's where they got the trolley from.
Looked very bucolic and beautiful. But actually, if you go like 5 yards either side, there's an industrial estate. But it was lovely. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. That's the one, I think we may have spoken about it before, but it's, I tried to be a smart ass by doing something before. You know that thing of when they say your time starts now when you read something. And I saw that there was an airbed there and a pump. And I thought, well, if this task involves blowing up the airbed, then I'm going to save myself a good 3 or 4 minutes by doing that before I open the task. Of course, the task didn't involve that.
Nothing to do with it. You know,
sometimes it's better to be prepared, right?
It is. And if that had paid off, you would have looked amazing.
Oh, it would. I mean, literally, that would have, I mean, I would have, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, that would have been five. I mean, honestly, even to this day, I suspect the title of my autobiography would have been, I pre-blew up the airbed.
Snappy title.
Not bad, is it?
Now, Doc had particularly bad memories of this this task as well. This is one that stuck in his mind because, of course, he really tried to do the task, but didn't notice two bridges.
Yes, but it's interesting that because even if he did notice the bridges, it was a really really shallow stream, and so you were about 8 feet away from the shopping trolley, or you're about 200 meters away from it if you go over the bridge.
Yeah.
So the bridges are moot anyway. I guess someone like John is worried that he's not going to be able to make the leap out of the other side of the canal. But do you know what I thought the task was going to be?
What?
You know that, what would you call it? It's like a riddle when you've got the fox, the chicken.
And the grain.
And the eggs and the grain.
Yeah.
And you've got to get them across. So I thought it was going to be that. And it's going to be some smart-ass Alex Horn thing of saying, of course, the airbed can't sit with a frozen chicken and the frozen chicken can't sit with a sponge because of their natural enemies. Like, oh, here we go. So that's what I thought I was going to be doing. So
you say that. You mock Alex for that sort of thing, but I think you love that sort of thing, Richard. You would have loved to have solved something like that.
I absolutely love the guy, as you know. He's one of the few geniuses in television, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, I'm that. Honestly, as so often with Taskmaster, you're thinking, oh, I wonder if this could be one of those tasks where you can like do it in 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is always my favorite tasks.
Yeah.
And if it had been that, I would have felt under pressure to solve that in real time, I suspect. I would have been like kind of, it would have been like the countdown conundrum for me, but over sort of 20 minutes of thinking, hold on, so if I take the sponges over on the airbed, leave the airbed over there, walk back on the sponges, collect the chicken, and it would have. So I was glad I literally just had to walk across and.
Some of the tasks you've just got to do, right? You've just got to get them done.
Yeah, exactly. Like the when I had to, when there was an egg and said eat this egg as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to do it, and because then you can go home. Or you can go and sit in the tiny, tiny dressing room in the Taskmaster house and do a Sudoku.
Doc didn't see the bridge, and it didn't matter anyway because he left a tin in the stream, which was a disaster. And which I kind of understand that because he was throwing stuff over, and you might miss a tin in the stream. I could have seen myself making that mistake. Quite how John didn't notice two giant sponges in his pockets while he walked away is beyond me.
Yeah. I wonder if he has a condition maybe. He's got just very spongy sides. And so
spongy sides, spongy side condition.
He might have sponge hip.
If that's the only way I'm willing to let that go, if John has sponge hip. So Doc and John both disqualified spongy hips and tin in the river, as discussed. It was 3 points for Catherine Ryan, doing it in 2:44. 4 points for you, Richard, and a rare 5 points for Joe Wilkinson.
Let's talk about Joe.
Yeah, well, speedy. I mean, there's the most action we've seen him partake in.
Yeah, rivers don't worry me.
What worries you, Joe?
Horses and darkness.
Let's talk about task two, which was a team task. It's make the best stop-motion film starring this potato. You have 1 hour Your time starts now. Yeah, I loved you and John as a team. You're quite relaxed, but then also a little bit formal. I think in this sort of task as well, especially, you click into producer mode. So it's like you're chairing the meeting. You're rolling with ideas. You're putting things out there. Nothing's wrong in a blue sky. You were just getting the ideas out there.
That sort of thing I enjoy. And obviously, I love John. I've worked with him lots. And so, and anything that starts with, you've got to come up with a pun. Because the second you've got a title for a television show, you're sort of laughing.
And the pun you went with was 28 Days Tater, which, may I say, was absolutely brilliant. I was a huge fan of 28 Days Tater because, of course, it was a zombie film you made with the potato. 28 Days Later, a zombie film, made perfect sense. Spectator, was that a Bond pun? I don't really know much about Bond.
Oh, I don't even remember what it was called. This literally just slipped off my mind like ice off a plate. I mean, there was nothing there, was there?
I really liked both of the films. What I would say about yours, I don't know if this is going to be controversial, Richard, because I feel like they should have got the 3 points and you guys should have got the 2 points.
Well, I'm so sorry, that's the door. I sort of feel like I've been supportive in your career up to now. I really do. But genuinely, I don't know what else there is you've wanted me to do. But you should have just rung and asked.
I think it's stop motion with a potato. There wasn't enough of the potato in yours. There was so much stop motion of Alex, who is a man. He's animated anyway. I feel like there should have been way more potato. And as Doc Brown said about theirs, and I agree with him, the animation on theirs was crazy smooth.
I tell you what, Ed, here's a thought for you.
Okay.
Maybe even a documentary for ITV2. Why don't you marry Doc Brown? How about that? Why don't you and Doc Brown just get married, set up home together, live a happy life? No, I think that's nonsense. Our film starred the potato. Mm. You know, in Wallace and Gromit, I mean, Wallace's name is in the title. He's not in it a huge amount.
Yeah, you know, sure.
It's very Gromit-based.
But Wallace is also... when you see Wallace, he's an animated plasticine model. You don't see Nick Park's not animated himself because there's no point. Because you gave Alex so much screen time. It's essentially just like a compilation. It's like a photo album of Alex. And that's not impressive. Whereas they were mainly potato-based.
I think if you watched it back with a stopwatch, you'd find you're incorrect. I think your memory is playing tricks on you. I would say this. What was the... Read out the task again. Ed, have you got it in front of you?
Make the best stop-motion film starring this potato. You have 1 hour. Yeah. Your time starts now.
Yeah. So it wasn't make the best stop-motion film that is entirely about this potato.
No.
But don't use your imagination. Don't bring other elements of the world into it, for goodness sake. It can only be about this potato, nothing else. What about the other little potatoes at the end, which is a really nice touch? You said, oh, no.
No, it was a nice touch.
Yeah, but those weren't the potatoes. Those are different potatoes. That's not the task. The task is about this one specific potato. It's got to be on screen the entire time.
All I'm saying is if it was up for the Oscars, I think you could nominate Alex for... best performance, best lead performance.
No, you're so wrong. Best supporting role.
But you know, I think that's true. You could also nominate the potato for best lead performance. But
yes, of course you would.
Look, story wise, I think yours was the best.
Now listen, Alex is the character actor who you know is going to die. He's not the star of that, the hero of that. What's the very first shot of that film?
It was the potato coming out of the grave, right?
Yeah. And then for quite a long time walking towards the house and then knocking, you know.
But then so much of Alex like looking and peeling and all of that. And it's just not impressive animation because, you know, you've animated a man who is already animated. If anything, you made him less animated.
If say so. But you know as well as I do that the post-production on these things is dealt with by the Taskmaster crew.
Okay, yes.
So we shot it, we wrote it and shot it. The Taskmaster crew then put it together. So someone in an edit house somewhere in Soho is thinking, should we put a bit more of Alex in this or a bit less?
Yeah.
And you know Alex's temper as well as I do. So Andy Cartwright, Andy Devonshire, the rest of the gang are thinking, if Alex isn't in this like a lot, he is going to go absolutely crazy.
That's true, yeah.
We're going to have him on the phone screaming at us. So they put a bit more Alex in. I would have had a bit less of him in. I agree with you. But the film is about a potato. It starts with the potato. The potato kills the antagonist. The potato is the protagonist. Alex is the antagonist.
I think your story was better. I think their animation was better. Because also, at the beginning of your film, there's a lot of human hands.
Yeah, but again, that's them editing. Ours was so good and so slick, they knew they had to put a few things in to make it obvious what had happened.
Ah, because are you worried that if they'd taken all the human hands out, people would have genuinely worried that the potato had come to life?
Yeah, a lot of people did. A lot of people on the street even now say, whatever happened with that potato, I'm still worried about the potato thing. And I always say to them, do you know what? I get this a lot. It was fictional. We made it up. And you see the relief on their face. They're like, oh, that is... So I think a lot of people, like when Orson Welles did War of the Worlds on the radio, a lot of people to this day are not buying potatoes. A, because of the starch, and B, because they're worried about them trying to take over the world.
So look, you got the 3 points. All that aside, history has proved you right. You got the 3 points, even though there are a lot of hands in it and it mainly starred a man. Spectator, the story didn't really make sense. I didn't understand the heel crushing the potato at the end. They panicked storyline-wise, which probably cost them the points.
So I think a pun title of a scary film.
Okay, so what's Bigfoot? Hateful Potato?
Night of the Living Spud.
Mash in the Attic.
Task three, we're back to bridges and rivers. Make a bridge over the river using only the items on this table. Highest self-supporting bridge wins. The bridge alone must support the potato. You must not touch the taskmaster's house. You have 20 minutes. Your time starts now.
Yeah.
It's a tricksy one, this, because, of course, the big secret, sneaky reveal was that there is quite a lot of building materials taped to the underside of the table, and there were clues dotted around that nobody spotted.
Yeah. It's one of those, the joke's on you. tasks, that one. And you say there were clues. it's written in Spanish on a boat, and then it's in two places you'd never look.
Yeah, absolutely.
If Sherlock Holmes was on Taskmaster 12, even he might have gone, oh, I should have looked under the table.
Should have looked everywhere. But this is escape room rules, so I do a lot of escape rooms, and the rule really is... the rule really is search everywhere.
Yeah. And it was absolutely right. And obviously, I was gutted for the producers, because what you really want is for four people not to spot it, but for one person to spot it. That's what you want. And they can't really do that sort of stuff so much anymore, can they? Because now everyone's looking for, where have you hidden something, or what's the trick? But those were more innocent days, Ed. It was series two.
I
didn't think Alex Horn was trying to trick me. You know, I thought he was just being a decent fellow human being. But yeah, I'm not a practical man. I'm not a builder or maker. So I tried to make the best out of a bad deal there.
Neither am I. And I think, as I follow escape room rules, I think I would have been in a situation where I found those materials and still lost, because I wouldn't have known what to do with them.
Well, I think I would have just put them all in a pile on top of each other. Because I was thinking exactly that when I was watching it back. And I was thinking, what would you have built? And I thought, there's enough. I would just put plunks of wood on top of each other and think no one's going to beat that. Or maybe two uprights. And who knows?
Yeah, it wasn't the magic bullet, was it? It wasn't the thing that immediately made you win the task. You'd still have to have some building nous.
I think, honestly, I think you just... a few bits of wood would have probably... I think you'd have beaten whatever won it. The more I watch Taskmaster now, I quite often think you'll have quite a complicated task with quite complicated rules. And I think if I'd known back then that a couple of people are definitely going to get disqualified here because they'll trip up the rules. So literally, I don't have to do anything. I literally have to do the most standard job possible as quickly as possible and take my 3 points, tuck them in my pocket and move on to the next round.
The Richard Herring method, just absolutely play it with a straight bat and you're pretty much guaranteed a victory. And he knew what he was doing, that guy.
He's a champion, you know?
Yeah.
Champion, you know, there's a reason champions are champions. It's not an accident.
Catherine, of course, I think had a good technique. I was very impressed by the triangles that she made with the straws and the rubber bands. I think it was a really good idea, but it didn't work. She only got 1 millimetre across the water.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's 20 minutes, and hers was the best looking by a million miles. But that's the tactic sometimes. You think someone, either by being terrible or by being great and it not quite working, is going to get 0 points. So I did feel for her. I think maybe if there were ever points for effort, which of course is completely against the ethos of the show, then she would have got some. So I literally just put everything on the table on top of each other.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I did.
Proper job it was. It was, you know, I've had workmen, I've had like plumbers come around to my house who are like you, and just like, right, I'll get this done. And then you find out they've just used spaghetti and straws.
But my view of it was, this isn't a real bridge. Yeah. The potato doesn't really need to get from that side to this. There's no lasting consequences. Can we do? If you'd said to me, this bridge is going to be used by school children for the next 15 years, I would have gone, hold on, maybe I won't just dump everything on top of each other. Honestly, perhaps I was too flippant, Ed, but I felt maybe the jeopardy wasn't
I feel wasn't like there. If you're using the basis of how you approach tasks as it having real life, long-lasting consequences, Taskmaster, perhaps not the show for you.
And yet here I am, six years later, still talking about it.
Still talking about it. Yeah, because you tried using the spaghetti, then you ended up using straws, cards, elastic bands, you just all bodged it together. With the hiding the stuff, did you respect Alex for doing that, or did you hate him?
No, I respect him for doing that. You know, I think it's, honestly, with my TV producer's head on, I suppose the Spanish is quite a good clue, but just one extra clue. I'm trying to think of another task we did that was similar, where something was hidden, but it was hidden in a slightly more, oh, I can't believe I didn't see it way. But either way, I thought, listen, it's a lovely task, and it's funny, and it was series two, so they hadn't really done that sort of thing before.
He did it to us. He did it to us in our series as well. There was a task where there were loads of items suspended from the ceiling. And we had to get to the caravan within a minute. And obviously, me and Rose ran straight to the caravan because we wanted to do the task on the sheet. But obviously, what we should have done is memorized everything, because then Alex asked for a list of the items. All of the items were written on the task, but in tiny letters, and there was a magnifying glass next to us. So we could have just looked and read out the list of items, which was very frustrating. But there was no clue to suggest it was there.
They're so clever, aren't they?
So in that task, Catherine came bottom, of course. It was 2 points for you, Richard. 3 points for Joe Wilkinson. It was a good episode for Joe, even though it was 1 point in the prize task. For Joe, it's a good episode. 4 points for Doc Brown, and 5 points for John Richardson's.
Absolutely.
Good bridge. I mean, I've never heard a studio of people applaud for someone putting matchsticks into a potato before, but that's Taskmaster.
That was very good, though, wasn't it? I mean, that's an extra, what's that, an inch and a bit on a matchstick?
I don't know if, for me, it didn't count as part of the bridge because he was piercing the potato with the matchstick. So what he's doing there is augmenting the potato.
You are absolutely right there, because that's not, we can't all, listen, is there any way we can get the production team on the phone and to retrospectively, you know, when people get done for doping,
yeah,
you know, suddenly the Tour de France doesn't have a winner for 15 years. I wonder if we could get a point taken off John, which would add a point to me and Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really true. I hadn't thought of that. I wish I thought of that at the time.
He's giving the potato legs. It feels like it's too late now.
Do you think?
Maybe in the next studio shows of the next series, if you just storm in and go, right, now we're here on Taskmaster grounds, I've got some things to say.
The only skill I had coming into this was that I can speak a bit of Spanish. And I translated it in my head and thought, no, it's just a boat called under the table.
The final studio task, which started off as put on a pair of food handling gloves, eat a whole banana, correctly put on a tie and clap as many times as possible in 100 seconds, most claps wins. It was changed because I think Catherine, you know, look, it all comes back round. Catherine followed in the footsteps of the suffragette movement and made her voice heard, and correctly made the point that it was weighted towards the men because of the tie putting on. So it was changed to eat a whole banana correctly and put on a tie.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. I thought it was good that it showed that people could roll with it and that Taskmaster were willing to change their mistakes and admit
mistakes. They knew that they'd made a terrible blunder. In a lot of it would be a career-ending blunder.
Yes.
if I hadn't moved that comma. I saved a lot of careers that day.
Yeah.
But she was absolutely right. But
yes, she was.
Don't have ties now either, do they really?
No, I wouldn't have been able to do it. I would have been much happier with the banana situation.
We can eat bananas.
Here's something, Richard. Eat the banana correctly.
Yeah.
Technically, I don't know if you've heard this about bananas. You ate the banana incorrectly. Because you peeled, I suppose you ate the banana correctly, but you peeled the banana.
I opened it incorrectly.
You opened it incorrectly because you went from the stalk, whereas that's supposed to be the handle and you're supposed to open it from the bottom.
I know, that's extraordinary, isn't it? I don't know where you get the purchase to open it from, well, the top, right? The bit without the stalk. But yeah, I read that and I haven't got on board with it.
No.
I'm going to admit, I still open from the stalk because it feels like it's got a fulcrum, it's got a pivot.
Yeah, I agree. I think I still open from the stalk. But I suppose that's something you could have argued in the studio if anyone had said you opened the banana incorrectly. You still ate it correctly. I don't know how you would eat a banana incorrectly.
Yes, listen, that was a sticking plaster. That's for sure, to cover up the terrible error that Alex had made. You know, so listen, I absolutely did my best. But it would have been interesting to see someone eat the banana incorrectly. I guess you could shove it at your jacksie.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing I was thinking, that someone could have got mixed up and popped the banana up their ass.
And you know what, Ed? If that is incorrect, I don't want to be correct.
I suppose Joe didn't eat the banana correctly in that he didn't eat the banana, so he was disqualified. Was he actually allergic to bananas? Is that why he didn't eat it?
Yeah, I don't think he's allergic like he would die, but he said, look, I'm allergic in terms of like some sort of rash or something, you know. They didn't agree with him.
Yes, I suppose.
Never complains, Joe.
Well, I suppose there was no way of him winning the series at that point, so there was no point in him giving himself a bad tummy or a rash for the sake of that.
Yes, that was like, there was one prize task. Yeah, so he could just give up. There's one prize task, which was undoing a roll of sellotape as quickly as he could.
Yeah.
And I had trouble at the beginning of it, but I just couldn't get that thing undone. And everyone was so far ahead, I just thought, there is no point in me knocking myself out here. So I just stopped.
Because, not going to lose dignity for the sake of that.
Well, I just, you know, it's a little bit less effort, isn't it? You never know when you've got to keep something in the tank.
Yes, exactly. So the results for that studio task, disqualified. Joe was disqualified for not eating the banana because he was allergic. 192 claps for John Richardson. It was 221 claps, so 3 points for Catherine. 237 claps for Doc Brown, 4 points. And you, Richard, 249 claps, 5 points.
Hold on, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to read all the words here. I'm going to move one comma and we'll see if we can sort this out.
Let's go.
OK. Put on a pair of food handling gloves, eat a whole banana correctly, put on a tie and, and clap as many times as possible.
Done. Surely.
I feel now that I've ruined the task.
No. Not at all.
Now we see the trouble that coin has got us into, don't we?
So you won the episode with 19 points, a lovely way to round off the series. It was 11 points for Joe. He still came bottom despite having one of his best episodes.
Wow.
Got round 12 points and 13 points both for Catherine and John. So it was the last one in the series. Catherine crowned Taskmaster champion with 94 points, closely followed by John, and then you in third, Richard, and then Doc, and then Joe.
Rock. How far behind John was I? How many points?
You were 4 points behind John, and he was 4 points behind Catherine.
Even if he'd lost a point for the matchsticks and the potato, we'd still be having the same conversation. So.
Yes,
I'm just going to let it go.
In my mind, he should have been disqualified from the bridge task.
Interesting.
So then you would have been second.
I don't think it's worthy of a disqualification. I think
maybe
you just
not have
to measure the bridge up to... And I think now the potato's got legs. And that's okay. A potato can have legs. That's not...
Okay, yeah.
Crazy.
So it would have maybe taken 4 centimetres off, which would have bumped you up higher.
Yeah, and he would have gone down. So I'd have gained a point. He'd have lost a point.
Yeah. So it was, I think, a deserved series victory for Catherine. I thought she was. She had some moments of flair, but also very consistent.
Solid as a rock.
Which is what you want from a champ. We have, of course, some emails for you, Richard.
Okay.
Some people who wanted some things cleared up that we didn't talk about.
Channel, I hope.
On your first episode, here we go. This is from Nathan in Massachusetts, one of our international listeners. Dear Ed, love Taskmaster, loving the podcast. If you have Richard Osman back as a guest, I have a question for him. For the task of buying the Taskmaster a gift, did you, Richard, have a backup plan in case your rash bets on darts didn't come off? Of course, this was one of your other darts-based prize task where you spent £20 on a gift of betting, and I think won £150, and then gave that to charity in a particularly dead-eyed attempt to exploit Greg's heart.
Well, and also in a dead-eyed attempt to save the lives of some children.
I don't believe I don't believe that for one second, Rich.
Well, listen, did I have a... No, I think my backup task was just to tell him I'd lost the whole money, but just show him what would have happened. I mean, I would have, you know, so it's... I don't know, or maybe just done some more bets until I did win. I guess.
And bankrupted yourself. That would have been quite the prize task of your bank account being overdrawn.
We've literally got no money. Happy birthday, Greg.
I'm not sure if you'd lost the money and not given it to charity, would you have got the charity to make a video saying we're no better off than we were originally?
That's a charity I've worked with for years and years and years, and so we're very pally. So I think I would have got them to do a thing saying we're really sorry, Richard lost the darts bet. If there's any way, Greg, you can send us £20.
Yeah, here's what the money would have got us. But unfortunately, we can't know because the darts didn't turn out as Richard hoped.
Because Rich is an absolute imbecile.
This is from Tom in Stratford-on-Avon. Hello, Ed. I have a question for Richard Osman, if you have him as a guest again on the podcast. Well, we do. So here it is. What was the story behind Richard making an appearance in Series 7 for James Acaster's task of delivering the task to Alex? Of course,
how long have you got? This is an amazing story.
I can't wait. Let's hear it.
Settle back, Ed. Okay. All right, podcast. This is itself a cup of tea, whiskey chaser. I was sitting at home. It's a Wednesday afternoon, let's say. Mm-hmm. Your phone goes, ding, ding. I got a message. James Acaster, can you help me with a task at Taskmaster? I said yes. I went down there. 10 minutes later, I did what he asked me to do. And then I went home. Can you believe that?
Amazing.
I think James knew that I lived nearby.
Yeah.
And so that's always, because I live nearby. Al Murray, I think, lives quite nearby as well, doesn't he?
Yes.
He's always cropping up. And so, yeah, this is the truth of it. I adored being part of that Taskmaster family. I still do. It was such a joyous thing to do. I mean, listen, there's lots of it that I found really difficult, but I'm so happy I did it. Anytime anyone from Taskmaster asked me to do anything, I am absolutely ready for action, because it was such a joyous thing. And even to this day, so many people stop me and say how much they love Taskmaster. I mean, it's sort of nonstop. Yeah. And so to get a message saying, do you want to be part of a task? I mean, I would adopt anything. Of course, I'd love to be part of a task.
Well, there we go. I remember that for Champion of Champions. I'm going to get you, Alma.
A humble brag?
Oh, yeah, well. I think if you need any local knowledge, they know that I humble brag all the time, slash brag.
If you need any local knowledge at all, you just send me a little text, because it's all my peeps. I know the cabbies, I know the takeaways, all of that.
Yeah, if the task is deliver a takeaway as far as you can away from the Taskmaster house, I'm sorted, aren't I?
Oh my God, yeah. I'd get one of my boys to take it out to Heathrow.
We know Taskmaster has really sort of really fallen off in quality if the task is get a Chinese takeaway to Heathrow.
Get a Chinese takeaway to China?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
You're talking.
Do you have to quarantine a takeaway?
Yeah.
Keep it in a hotel for 2 weeks?
14 days, yeah. And then it has to have an anal swab.
Dear Ed, my question for Richard is, which task did you enjoy the least? Saving the cat, getting the shopping in the trolley, or impressing the mayor? All the best, Caroline in Rochester, Minnesota. I think I might know the answer to this, Richard. But...
Oh, yeah. Well, I liked two of those tasks. Mm. I liked the trolley one because it was fun to throw the trolley.
Yeah.
Even though it was heavier than I thought it was going to be. And I liked impressing the mayor, to be honest. I didn't like the first bit. Yeah, I didn't like the tree, getting the cat from a tree. That was there's a moment in every series, my favourite moment in every series, where you see even the most mild-mannered contestants slightly lose their temper.
Yeah.
Even Joe. And that was mine. That was where I was just like, mate. Because, I can't really see very much. And they were incredibly accommodating of that all the way through. I mean, it was not an issue. But that was one where I was just saying, look, I can't even, I have no idea where it is.
Can't even see the cat.
I don't even know where it is. I don't really want to be gaffer taping pool cues together to pod something rather than it is. Yeah, so I was like, and it was the end of a long day. I can honestly say I didn't enjoy it.
Richard, thank you so much for coming back on the Taskmaster podcast and talking about one of your episodes. I know you don't enjoy watching yourself back. Look, we've got so many more episodes to come. So at some point in the later series, we'll let you come back on and you can talk about other people.
Okay. Beautiful. I'd love that. Oh, just me talking about Dave Dorman for now. Yes, please.
Of course, we get our guests to rate the Taskmaster podcast experience out of 5 points. I believe last time, I think you might have given it 5. We can check that. But again, feel free to, you know, speak the truth. This time, what's the point score?
What's your average?
It probably comes out at about 4.2 or something. Because, of course, people now and again like to give it a low point score.
Yeah. I was going to take off a point for your stop motion.
Oh, fair comment. Point. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then your very, very thoughtful contribution to the potato on matchsticks on bridge debate has bumped you back up again. So I'm going to give you another 5, Ed.
Thank you very much, Richard Osman.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Richard, our first returning guest, apart from Alex Horn. And hopefully he will come back again. I very much enjoyed chatting about Series 2 there with Richard. And I think he'll enjoy it more when we're talking about another episode that doesn't involve him and he can relax, just make fun of everyone's choices. That's the end of our chats about Series 2. We will, of course, be talking about Series 3, but not for a while, because now we hit pause on the old episodes and we start chatting about Series 11 that starts on the 18th of March, Channel 4, 9 p.m. Don't forget, it's very exciting. It's an incredible lineup. I can't wait to talk to them about it. I can't wait to talk to everyone about it. Guys, I'm excited. I've not been out of the house for months. Come back here next week and we can start. Bye-bye.